Well, hey, everybody, and welcome back to X-Files Diaries. We're taking a little break this week, so we are going to rerun one of our more classic episodes, our discussion of Bad Blood. But before we do that, we're going to play some tweets of the week.
He's made outrageous public statements on an internet site.
That wasn't him. That was me. And they're not outrageous.
Okay, tweets of the week. These tweets are in response to our episode of our five least favorite episodes each. Bottom five, least high five, five not great episodes each. Lots of good responses to that. Everyone's, of course, got their own least favorite episodes, and it's always great to hear about that and to hear what people think about the ones that we picked. From Lauren Lisko, Lauren says, I dizzied myself nodding so violently in agreement with everything you both said. Thanks, Lauren. From my own list, Lord of the Flies is pretty unbearable and is among my worst, but its one redeeming quality is Aaron Paul's guest appearance. Schizogeny and fire are also complete disasters. I also wrote a side note on my list that just says season 9. I swear every time I try to rewatch 90% of the episodes from that season, I end up inadvertently napping because my brain is trying to spare me from the train wreck that is that season. My number one worst is a tie between First Person Shooter and El Mundo Gira because they both cause me literal physical pain when I attempt to watch them.
Relatable.
Yeah, relatable on every level. I don't remember a thing about Lord of the Flies, so I can't comment on that except the fact that I can't remember a single thing about it is probably a sign that it's not a great episode.
Honestly, this is really funny, and I agree with her about season 9 for the most part being sort of a train wreck. It's just not my favorite. But I don't think that's any fault of the episodes. I think that's the fault of the decision and the way they handled Mulder's exit. I think that hurt season 9 when there's actually some episodes in season 9 that I do really enjoy. Lord of the Flies, I think, is not like terrible. It does have Aaron Paul, and I do love Aaron Paul, and she's right. That is its one redeeming quality. And it has Rocky. I do love Rocky. He's very funny.
Rocky, that's right. Yeah.
He cracks me up. But the episode, it's, and it has Jane Lynch. Like, wow, they had everything firing on all cylinders to work. And it,
they had
and
the
yet,
tools.
And yet they came out with that. I don't know what
Honestly,
happened.
Honestly, like, you have to try to do a shit job and come up with something crap with all those ingredients.
But she's right about that, and she's right about schizogeny being a total train wreck. I really don't like that episode. It did have a couple.
I don't care for schizogeny.
It's just, I don't know, I don't like any of it, but I agreed again with all of her things here.
Fire, I don't know if I'd say fire was a complete disaster, but hey, to each his own. At least it's an episode I remember, so if I can remember it and I don't like cringe when I remember it, then that's enough for me to get it out of the complete basement. But I totally see where you're coming from, Lauren. It's not exactly brilliant.
And I don't hate it. I just don't really think about it much.
Think about it sometimes. But So thank you for all of those thoughts and insights, Lauren. SKS said, great choices, and I love that you also mentioned the redeeming moments of each episode. My least favorite changes, but never my five worst in general. Interesting. Right now, it's a tie between Excelsior Day for the sexism and victim shaming and Fight Club for Mulder and Scully's slapstick behavior. Yeah, those are two kind of classic terrible episodes, I think.
Yeah, we mentioned them briefly, but they didn't quite make either of our bottoms.
They didn't quite make our list.
Worthwhile of mentions, for sure.
But they were definitely, I don't know if I want to call them honorable mentions so much as like dishonorable mentions. So yeah, no disagreements from us at all on that, SKS, for sure. And I'm sure lots of other folks would agree with that too. Monica File Fan said, of Teso Dos Bichos, I think Monica is quoting Gillian Anderson here.
Yeah, I believe so.
this is a quote, isn't it? Saying, and this is Gillian Anderson, I won't attempt to do her awesome voice. Here I am struggling with this fake bunny slash cat in my face, pretending to get scratched and be terrified when the bunny fur keeps sticking to my lipstick and going up my nose. And Kim Manners and I cannot stop cracking up at the ludicrousness of it all.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That sounds about right. That's Tessa Dos Bichos in a nutshell. And you know, and it's one of those things that it kind of does translate on screen in the terms of that scene in that moment is really not good. So they tried. They tried to get something out of it, but that was never destined to have a great success. from Pekka. Hi, Pekka. Also loving the there is something good in every up angle. I'd like to defend Shapes. It at least has Vancouver atmospheric qualities. Mm-hmm. For me, the moody forestry vibe was the third lead of the show, and thus the worst episodes are from the LA years. Demonicus, Salvage. I'm trying to remember what JTS is.
Is that Jump the Shark?
Jump the Shark, thank you. You know what, Pekka? I am in full agreement with you on this in many ways. It's not the first time that I have bitched about how much there was a decline in atmospheric quality with the move to LA. So I'm totally in agreement. I think you make a strong case that if it was a foresty episode that they filmed in Vancouver, it can't be one of the worst. So fair enough. I mean, I think it was me that put Shapes on my list. I still think it was a terrible episode, but I think that you make a compelling point that by virtue of the fact that it's in Vancouver and it looked foresty, that would be enough to get it out of your bottom five, Pekka. And I'm not going to disagree with that.
I think that's a fair defense. I disagree, as season six is my favorite season, and that was the first year of the LA years. But yep. I cannot disagree with the idea that the atmosphere is like the third character of the show, the third lead of the show.
I really like that. That was really well put.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think luckily, though, by the time they moved to LA, Mulder and Scully carried the show just fine.
Yes, so that's true. That's true. Luckily, you could say, I think, maybe MSR became the third lead of the show when they moved to LA, because it was just that point in the series.
Exactly.
Good stuff. From Sunday Lulz. Hi, Sunday. I've completely enjoyed your takedown of the apps, ladies. Boom. Most of your choices rate on the high on the bag of shite meter. For me, eps that don't feature Scully are always skipped on the annual X-Files rewatch. I am one of those that doesn't hate first-person shooter, but I did enjoy your ire at it. We bring the ire, don't we, Eddie?
I think our ire was more entertaining than the episode. I have to say that.
I think it's kind of... I would have to say that about most of those episodes. Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit immodest for me to say that I was super entertaining, but I think we were more entertaining than the episodes. I'm just stating a fact.
But it's not hard. That's the thing. It's not hard.
The standard is low. Let's be honest. I remember hearing once that bad reviews are always way more entertaining and easier to write than good reviews for movies or books, etc. And there's something to be said for that. It's a little fun just to kind of knock things occasionally. Yeah. And, you know, we do that so rarely. And we did try to be a little bit positive.
We did our best.
But it was kind of nice to let loose a little bit on a few things, too. So yeah. I'm glad that people appreciated the ire. Karen Rain Knight said, I would disagree that Jump the Shark felt like an episode of The Lone Gunman than an episode of The X-Files, because other than kind of awkwardly addressing some plot threads from The Lone Gunman, it was completely devoid of that show's humor. Jump the Shark felt like something written out of spite to the network for the show being canceled, but instead it came off as a big fuck you to both fans of The X-Files and The Lone Gunman. I really like that point, actually. And that's an interesting point that Karen makes about the actual show, The Lone Gunman, actually having, you know, a little bit of humor to it, which Jump the Shark really didn't.
Yeah, and I absolutely believe her. That's the only reason I couldn't have said that is because, like I said, I never saw the show. So I have no idea what kind of humor it is. But that makes total sense because they are humorous guys and they're lighthearted guys. And again, it just didn't fit them in any way, shape, or form. And I'm going to get all riled up again if we start talking about this.
Yeah, wow, this is good. This is dangerous.
Yeah, dangerous territory.
uncover these landmines again. Karen also adds, sadly, oh gosh, Kraken will get ironed up again. Sadly, the script for first-person shooter, which is just as cringy as the episode, does confirm that it was supposed to be Scully's head on Bondage Lady's body at the end of the episode. Let us all have a facepalm on that concept.
Well, good to know. Well, good to know.
Yeah, good to know, I guess. It's good to know that our ire was accurate in that case. And while I don't like to unnecessarily throw Chris Carter under the bus, he did direct First Person Shooter. So even if he couldn't do rewrites for whatever reason, I still put some of the blame on him, especially after David Duchovny complained to him that Mulder was acting out of character.
I would love to see the source of this.
Yeah, no, I had not heard that before.
I hadn't, and or maybe I had, but I just don't remember where Karen got that. And so if you do have that source, Karen, let us know, because I'm very curious. And I hate that. I hate that David was like, no, Mulder wouldn't do this. And Chris Carter was like, whatever. Like, I hate that.
It really reflects very poorly on Chris Carter, because of course he was in a position where he could do rewrites if he wanted to. He's the boss. So, and by that time, I got to think he had some respect for David Duchovny in terms of his ability, number one, to understand Mulder, and number two, as a writer himself.
Yeah, so, well, again, that's why I want to know, like, how this all went down and what the actual conversation was. And I'm very curious to hear more about this.
That's interesting. It's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Karen wraps up saying, I do appreciate you finding some good among all the crap, and at least we'll always have Mulder's arms. We sure will.
Indeed. Indeed.
That was at least something. And Pharmaceutical said before she listened to the episode, I swear to God, if Jen says that Bad Blood is her least favorite episode, I'm a busted aneurysm. I'm so glad, Pharmaceutical, that I did not bust your aneurysm.
I am too, because you would have been fired from this podcast.
I would have been fired, and that would have been the last that anyone would have heard of me. Although perhaps for everyone's health, it might have been for the best. But yeah, no. I mean, I appreciate Pharmaceutical that you are a fan of the show enough to know that that was always going to be a possibility, that I was going to put it as my least favorite episode, because I guess I've pretty much established how I feel about Bad Blood. But no, I'm never going to put it as my least favorite. I have a feeling I would probably not even talk about how much I dislike it if other people didn't love it so much. So it's more of a contrast between how I feel about Bad Blood and how the majority of the fandom does, more than me actually disliking the show. I would put it like, you know, middle of the road.
Yeah, that sounds right.
The fact that everybody else loves it so much makes me tend to kind of stand out a bit, I guess, in the sense that I don't like it. I don't hate it, though. I don't dislike it. I just don't like it. And that's okay.
It is okay. It's all
right. We all like and dislike things, and we've gotten all of that out of our system now, I think. Our ire has been aired. Not that we won't feel ire again on our topics in the future, but that was a pretty ire-filled episode.
Yeah.
And
I'm sure it'll come back at some point.
We always have a little hint of the ire, but that just keeps things spicy.
Exactly.
Thank you, everyone, for sharing your ire with us and bringing all your interesting arguments to the table, as always. Do feel free to tweet with and at us anytime at XFD Podcast, and we look forward to chatting with you there.
Mulder, the internet is not good for you.
Well, we chose Bad Blood today. We have quite a few episodes like that are kind of on the lineup to be discussed. But this one we wanted to kind of talk about pretty soon, because I know it's a very popular episode and a lot of people love it. And I think the most interesting thing about this episode is that Jen does not love it.
Oh, God, I was afraid that's what you were going to say the interesting thing about it.
But it is interesting, because I think it's rare, and I think it's unique,
it is
and
rare.
I think it's special. We only got to talk about it last time, like really briefly, because I think we were running down our top lists.
Yep.
And I would love to just dive into this with you and find out where you're at now and what your deal is. Come on, Jen, what's your deal?
I'm going to deal out my deal. No problem.
Okay, ready. Good.
I'm ready.
So Bad Blood, directed by Cliff Bohl, written by Vince Gilligan. I mean, I don't even really need to introduce this episode, I think, because I think anyone who's an X-Files fan knows exactly which one this is. I think that you kind of need to start as the person who does not care for this episode. And I think let us know why. I want to know.
Okay. First of all, I'm going to start by saying I love Vince Gilligan, the writer of this episode, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. He's probably, if I had to pick a favorite X-Files writer, it would be Vince Gilligan. I actually went and looked at like my top 25 episodes today for which we did a podcast episode a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And I just had a quick look through to see like how often does he show up in my top 25. And he has writing credits on like 8 of my top 25 episodes, which is like the second highest of any writer, behind only Mr. Chris Carter, interestingly enough.
Yeah.
He's written some great stuff. Like for me, my favorites are like Pusher, Tithonus, Folia de Unruhe, Monday. Those are all in my top 25.
Yeah.
And those are all just his solo writing credits. He's co-written a lot of my favorites too. And so I adore him. But having said that, he has written better comedy episodes than this, because he's also written X-Cops. He's written Je Souhaite. He's written Small Potatoes. I like all of them better than this one. And I think the main reason, if I had to sum it up, is this doesn't feel like an X-Files episode to me. And I know that that X-Files episodes can encompass a very broad range, but the thing that's different about this episode compared to the other offbeat episodes is that Mulder and Scully, because of the structure of the episode, because it's all about telling the story from different points of view, Mulder and Scully are not the usual Mulder and Scully, because they are represented as each other sees them, which is a very fun concept. It's very well executed. It's an entertaining episode to watch. I don't question absolutely any of that. There's definitely bits in it that I find really funny. But it's like, they're just, I watch the X-Files to watch Mulder and Scully, not like a parody of Mulder and Scully. It feels more like it should be like a DVD extra or something. It's like a brilliantly executed comedy sketch or something like that. I just can't like put it in the same category as the rest of the series because it's so different. Usually the comedy episodes, Mulder and Scully are in character to varying degrees, but they're still in character. The comedy occurs around them typically with the other characters and the situations that are funny. And yeah, Mulder and Scully can be funny too, but they're still Mulder and Scully. And having them, you know, just be, you know, these kind of funny versions of Mulder and Scully, it's funny, but it's like, you know, I'm watching the X-Files, not Saturday Night Live. So it just doesn't appeal to me for that reason. And at the end of the day, honestly, this idea that like, oh, you know, hey, this is how they see each other. It's funny. Yeah, but it's like, they don't see each other particularly nicely. It's a little kind of like almost disrespectful at times. It feels as like, you know, diehard shipper. It's kind of like, geez, that they don't really seem to think that much of each other, do they? And so I have an issue with that too. So it's just, there's just things about it that I've just, it's just, and it just never has quite clicked with me. I know it clicks with a lot of people, but it just, I admire it as a successful episode and a well-constructed one, but I don't like it. It's just, it's not my style. There's just things about it that are weird, and I have trouble getting past the fact that for most of the episode, it appears that Mulder has murdered that poor Roddy boy, and no one seems to really care about him. It's like, you killed that guy.
Well, don't you think?
Are we not even going to think about that?
Don't you think? Okay, first of all, that's resolved halfway through the episode, right?
It's more than halfway, in my opinion. I think it was like it's closer to the end.
No,
before we find
out
that he's not actually dead.
That's like 2/3 of the way into the episode.
Maybe
I feel like that's maybe after the third like act break. Like so.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And here's my okay. First of all, let me respond. I'm going to respond.
Please.
This doesn't surprise me because to me this is yet another experimental episode.
Yeah.
And you're not a fan of those in general.
Correct.
Anytime we kind of deviate from the usual path, you kind of get like antsy and you're like, oh, I don't like this. This is something new and different. And I get that. And I get that's completely a matter of taste. Completely. Yeah. And so because I've been thinking about this ever since we talked about it, I've been thinking about it because I'm like, do I have this completely wrong? Like, why do I like this? She hates it so much. Why do I like it? and I'm like, I'm second guessing myself, you know, and or why does everybody like it? Because you're absolutely right. It's not a flattering view of either of them.
Yeah.
And the more I thought about it, the more I was starting to think that, this isn't. Obviously, this isn't Mulder and Scully we're watching. This is like extremely character, like caricatured versions of them.
Yeah.
But when you kind of walk it back and look at it as this is their perspectives of each other, how they see each other, not only how they see each other, but how they're telling each other how they see each other. So to me, it kind of makes me think of like they're actually kind of having therapy here. They're having a little bit of therapy, and it's like their way of getting out their gripes with each other, in kind of a safe way, which is what Mulder and Scully do. Like, she's not going to come out and say, you know, Mulder, sometimes you drive me up the fucking wall. Like, she's not going to say that. She's gonna say it by telling him this story by, I think, purposefully. Making him, you know, making it worse than it actually is.
Okay.
So it's like, so I, when I watch this, I have to keep in mind, I'm sorry, there's like a lot of layers. I have to keep in mind that not only are they discussing how they see each other, but they're telling it to each other. I often wonder how different the story would be if Scully were, say, telling it to Skinner. I do not think it would be the same. They're obviously like he's doing the whole buck teeth thing only to get a rise out of Scully. It's his it's his safe way of saying, I'm not cool with the fact that you hit on this guy. It makes me uncomfortable, but I'm not going to tell you that. So I'm going to just kind of make fun of you about it. You know what I mean? And so I don't look at it as like Scully, because one of the most probably egregious examples of this is when Mulder is from Mulder's POV, and he's in the hotel room, and Scully is just coming off like a shrill, horrifying person who is just bothering him. Even when he goes even when he's just like, finally you left. And I mean, I'm watching this and going, oh my God, Mulder is like, is that you really think that of her? That's really kind of terrible. But I think he's not telling us as an audience, this is what I think of Scully. He's telling Scully, hey, maybe you got to lay off a little bit. You know what I mean? And he's deliberately going over the top. Like, I don't think that, you know what I mean? He's deliberately doing it because he's telling her. Does that make sense?
It does, actually. Okay. I mean, I never really thought of it in terms of that additional layer of this is the point of view that they are telling each other.
Correct. Like,
it's not necessarily the point of view that's being presented directly to us, the audience.
Yes.
It's the point of view as they are telling each other.
Telling each other.
Yeah.
And so
we don't necessarily. It's not necessarily their genuine point of view. It's just the point of view they're choosing to represent to each other.
It's actually, it goes to the very heart of how these two have these communication issues.
Right.
Because they have all these sort of secret gripes, like we all do with any of our spouses or partners or anybody. We all have them. We're not going to just come out and say it. So we're going to kind of find this sort of passive aggressive way to get it across. And so to me, that's what this episode is. It's we're halfway through this series. We're what, season five, halfway through it. We're pretty much exactly halfway through the series.
Yeah.
They've both established this dynamic. And this episode is so, like, I mean, we've already said this, but it's so meta. It's not really as funny as a lot of other Vince Gilligan episodes, especially if you're not an X-Files fan. If you are an X-Files fan, which you are, and I'm not jabbing this at you because you dislike this for other reasons, but if you're an X-Files fan and you know these characters, it's that much funnier.
Definitely.
If you don't, it's not going to be as funny. So, I mean, like, say if I watch, like, a Small Potatoes or if I watch a Je Suis, which are both Vince Gilligan's, right?
Yeah.
They are both funny just inherently as a funny episode. This is extremely meta. This is making fun of the show, making fun of the characters. And it's kind of, to me, that's why I love it, is because I feel like it's directly aimed at the fans. And so that's kind of my defense of the anti-shippiness of this. I think it's extremely shippy because it's essentially them like in couples counseling with each other.
That's interesting. I never thought of it that way before. And I like that interpretation of, you know, this is a sort of a safe way of of airing their gripes, if not the most direct or necessarily healthiest way, but just way at least.
They're the definition of unhealthy. We know this.
They are. Yeah, direct has never been their strong suit. And by the end of the episode, they're getting along fine. So I'm not sure how well I'd be getting along with my work or life partner if I'd had to hear that version of myself for an extended period of time. But at the end of the episode, they're still getting along just fine, which is one of the things I've always loved about Mulder and Scully. They can argue and then like they can drop it just like that and just get back to work and back to their relationship.
Sometimes even to their detriment.
You know? Sometimes like that can be almost problematic. You're absolutely right that like they resolve things just a little too quickly sometimes without really resolving them.
Right.
But sometimes it is good just, you know, you get things off your chest. And in this case, there's really like not much more to say. Can we just move on from all of that for now?
Yeah. No, totally.
And so, yeah, I can kind of see that. I think that's a fair point. And you're absolutely right about I don't know what you would think of this episode if you weren't an X-Files fan. I'd be kind of curious what kind of impression it would make on you. You'd probably follow the concept that, oh, okay, it's different people's point of view.
Right.
But like, you really wouldn't get most of the jokes. It would be like, why is it funny that Mulder is commenting on Scully's little legs? It's like,
right, stuff
but,
like
but
that.
We will find that hilarious as fans, which you're absolutely right, is fun, which is why it feels very sort of in-jokey. As though like that's something they would have just like done for the crew or something like that. It's which is fun. It's nice, you know, as fans to kind of be treated to that. And it is a treat. And it's like you couldn't write it better. If you set out to do this concept of an episode, you know, Vince Gilligan wrote it brilliantly, I think. And I mean, it's iconic in many ways. There's many scenes, lines, gifts from this episode that are iconic.
Yeah.
Whether it's like Mulder trying to eat the pizza on the bed while it's jiggling, or, you know, Scully makes a face while Mulder's talking. And, you know, there's lots of, you know, it wasn't even regular cream cheese. It was like cream cheese. Those are all iconic lines and moments and Shaft and all that. That's all, when people think X-Files, that's a lot of what they think. So, you know, I got to respect the fandom for embracing this episode and raising it to the level that it's at, because I mean, it is very unusual to not be a fan of this episode. So
yeah.
I get why people like it sort of intellectually. I think it's just, you're right. I'm not usually a fan of the more offbeat episodes, although I've tried to be a little more embracing of them over the years, but this one, no, it's still not happening with me in Bad Blood. It's just, there's something about it that's just, it's just a bit too off for me.
Yeah.
But I still enjoy watching it. I mean, I watched it a couple of times this week in anticipation of our chat. And I actually watched it not that long ago as well. So, and it's not a chore to get through by any means. There are some episodes that are a chore to get through. Right. They feel like, it feels like it's taking 2 hours to get through a 45-minute episode. Bad Blood, I must say, it flies by when you're watching it.
Because you know, if nothing else, it's entertaining. Yeah,
it's entertaining, no question about it. It's just, it's never going to get very high on my list of favorite episodes, but I'm never going to like hate on it necessarily.
Right.
And I can still enjoy it. I mean, Scully doing those autopsies is like, that's just fabulous.
Right.
That is really great. That's probably my favorite part of the whole episode.
Well, when
actually,
you look
is
at
Scully
it as,
the autopsies.
Yeah, no. And that's, I think a lot of, when you look at it as like a series of moments or of iconic scenes or like, you can't really fault it for that. Like, as an episode as a whole, I can kind of see where you're coming from. I get it.
Mm.
I wanted to talk to you about, in terms of the unreliable narrator concept of back and forth between them, which parts do you think were manufactured, i.e. the buck teeth, and which parts do you think were true? Because every time I watch it, I often go, did that really happen? Or is that like, for example, this is something like that. I think obviously the Shaft thing had to happen because it was just so damn specific. Like,
yeah,
I don't think
you can't make that up.
Yeah. And same with like the cream cheese comment. Like, we can all see her saying that, and like, we can, maybe it wasn't said in that way, but I think that it was one of those things that was probably happened because it was so specific. Then I look at something like near the very beginning when they're doing Scully's POV and they're in the funeral home and they're introducing each other to the sheriff and Mulder can't remember her name. And he's snapping his fingers and he can't remember her name. And I go, okay, well, that obviously didn't happen.
Yeah, but like, sure he wouldn't do that.
Right. And so it's like, but she's telling him, like, you didn't even remember my name. Like, she's telling him that in the story, which again, it brings in an entirely new level of like, what is this? What are these issues? These underlying issues here? Like, she's trying to tell him, like, look, when we're in front of a case, it's like, I don't even matter. Like, this is in the midst of a comedy episode. That sort of thing, when you kind of unpack it, you're like, well, what does that mean? And why did she feel that way? Like, is that what she really thinks of him? Or is that, like, what is she trying to tell him there? You know?
Or does she feel that way about him? Or, you know, to sort of springboard off of your points earlier, does she just want to communicate to him that he sometimes makes her feel unimportant?
Yes.
So that she didn't genuinely remember it as having happened that way, but that maybe she just wants to, you know, exaggerate it slightly for his benefit.
Correct.
To sort of communicate to him that, yeah, you kind of make me feel invisible sometimes. I feel like I'm not that important. You're just so distracted and so into the case. And I don't feel like I'm important.
Right.
And that's a way of communicating that without saying it.
See what I mean? How this is like kind of more like a therapy session. It's like every single little thing that happens can be unpacked in that way.
You're making a really strong case there.
I think, can you think of any off the top of your head that you were kind of curious about? Like,
Parts of the episode, what's interesting about the structure, I mean, there's lots of interesting things about the structure, but parts of the episode, they tell two different versions of the same thing because they were both there. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, when they first meet the sheriff, quite different versions of how that all went down.
Yeah.
Which is
my voice keeps cracking because I'm getting over a cold. I promise everyone I'm not hitting puberty. Anyway, continue.
Or crying about bad blood or anything like that. But then there are also portions of the episode that they don't have two different points of view because they are separated during those parts.
Right.
And so those are interesting in terms of we only get one version of what actually happened. It would be I almost kind of wish they had like really embraced that concept and done it for the whole episode. Like every single scene they were in together and we got a different point of view for every single scene.
But then it wouldn't have been funny.
Certain number. It might have been too much.
It wouldn't have been unique at all because then it would have just been yet another episode where they're apart the whole time.
I wish they'd been together the whole time. I wish they'd been together the whole time and had two different points of view of everything.
Oh, you're saying you don't want those scenes where they're not in each other. Okay, okay. Like, I thought you were saying you wanted the whole thing to be that way. And I was like, that's just a regular episode, Jen.
Well, I mean, technically, I probably actually would prefer that. But it's like, if you're going to do it, go all the way. Like, there's portions of the episode where, like, Mulder and the sheriff are together and Scully's not there.
Well, see here, from a production standpoint, I have to say, you have to put those sorts of things in so that it doesn't feel too repetitive. Like, I mean, we even had to deal with that sort of thing in, say, Monday, when you're seeing the same thing over and over and over again. And so you have to have sort of different scenarios, but
you got to kind of get this story moving. So I can appreciate that. One thing I noticed as well is that it seemed to me when Scully is telling the story, she herself, the character of Scully, seems pretty close to regular Scully. When she's telling the story, she herself comes off as pretty typical for the most part. When Mulder's telling his version of the story, he seems quite different than how we normally see him in an episode.
Interesting.
Like much more mellow,
like withdrawn,
almost calm, rational,
humble.
And we know he's none of those things, but that's how he presents himself when he's telling his version of the story. When Scully's telling her version of the story, she presents herself as pretty similar to how we normally see her.
That's a good point.
And which I'm not quite sure what that says about how they view themselves, but and part of it is also in the performances as well. I mean, I think David Duchovny maybe gave a slightly more over-the-top performance throughout the episode, even when they weren't necessarily doing the POV portions. But just throughout the episode, it seems like David Duchovny is like kind of given it his all.
I mean, he's a little more comfortable doing comedy, I think.
I think so.
I mean, that's no fault of Jillian's. I just think he's been given more opportunity to do that.
Yeah. And I think that maybe Jillian does a different style of comedy than he does. From what we've seen of the comedy that she's done since then, her comedy tends to be, you know, a bit more dry, very sort of like, you know, very understated kind of comedy. And versus his is slightly more broad.
And he's been allowed to be a little bit more silly. Like,
he's broad, just a silly guy, I think. So
I mean, and no matter what, like when you look at the two of them, she's always going to be the straight man. So even when she gets to be funny, she still has sort of a boundary. And he doesn't. I mean, even from the top, when we're seeing what's the real reality, like, you know, the smashing of the trash can at the beginning when he's just kicking it. I mean, what a random thing to do, like have Mulder throw a little Kylo Ren tantrum. You know what I mean? That's just kind of how
weird.
Yeah, it's a little weird. And I mean, I don't necessarily think it's out of character, but I feel like what you were talking about earlier when you were saying that, hey, well, nobody seems to care about this kid that they killed. I think the reason nobody seems to care or really thinks is because right off the top, we are told this is a lighthearted episode. This is a comedy episode with the music, the Mark Snow score right off the top. It's kind of like this plucky strings and this sort of we're like, okay, we're going into something that's a little different. We're going into something that's a little silly. We're not supposed to be worried that he just killed a kid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We know that from the cold open when they open it with him about to say, oh shit. And then it goes right into the theme song. Like you know, right off the top that we are into a comedy episode and this is all going to turn out okay. So I think that's probably for that reason. And plus the kid that is playing, and I should have looked this up. Did you happen to look up his name? Because I know this kid, he's like in a bunch of stuff, who's playing Ronnie Strickland. I'm going to look him up because he's worth a shout out. Is just such a silly actor, like who's always playing these. I mean, I feel like he was cast that way purposefully so that you don't like necessarily, I don't want to say feel sorry for them, but you don't necessarily think this is like a tragic event that's happened, you know?
Yeah, I suppose so. I think I agree very much with what you're saying about the music score as well. In fact, I wrote down in my notes something like the music does a lot of the heavy lifting with establishing this as a comedy episode in that first scene after the credits. Mm-hmm. Because when you actually, if you were to watch that first scene between Mulder and Scully in the basement without the music, I don't know if you'd pick up a whole lot of comedy because it's not a particularly comedic scene, but the music kind of is very clearly sending that message.
Well,
almost a little over the top for me.
I don't know, because of the trash can thing and because of the Large Marge comment and just because of
that Large Marge comment makes me cringe so hard.
Really?
I hate it.
Why?
It comes off as very sort of dated and cringeworthy and vaguely homophobic and just kind of inappropriate, and it's like, oh, please don't.
That's really funny. I hate
that line.
I don't think of it that way. By the way, Patrick Renna is the name of the actor who plays Ronnie Strickland.
He's great.
I just know him from The Sandlot.
I just
think of him from The Sandlot. Anyway, he was great. He was fantastic in this. But
I want to say, is it Luke Wilson that plays the sheriff?
Oh yes, and I have a lot to say about him.
Oh well, please do.
Okay, do you want to go into that? Okay.
Yeah, if you want.
I have mentioned this before, that the casting of Luke Wilson in this role, I think, was so perfect because I think he looks like David Duchovny. Like, he is a carbon copy of him. They have the same jaw structure. They have the same coloring. They look very, very similar. Okay. And so the reason, and not only because that makes it funny, because, okay, obviously she's attracted to this guy that looks exactly like Mulder, but I think it's funny from a production standpoint for them to do that, because these people that are like insisting, you know, quote unquote, insisting that they're platonic and there's no way Scully's going to be attracted to this very obviously attractive man. It makes me laugh that they cast someone who looks just like him and then make a point that she's attracted to this other person who looks just like him. So I don't know. I think that was a really brilliant choice on their part to sort of kind of thumb their noses at people for saying, you know, it's kind of an inside joke for anyone who thinks that they're platonic, because maybe he's just not her type, you know, maybe we can just say maybe he's just not her type, that and so she's not attracted to Mulder because he's not her type. No, well, we know that's not true because of Bad Blood. So
I didn't really notice that, I have to say. I mean, I love Luke Wilson. He's a fine looking man. But I must say, when I was watching the episode, I'm like, yeah, he's good looking. But I mean, like, he's coming off in the episode like he's like the dreamiest guy ever. And I thought, you know, he's a good looking guy. But if they were going for dreamy, they probably could have cast somebody else. But you make a fair point that if their concept was to cast someone who looked like Mulder, then he fits the bill.
Yeah. And I think that was their concept, because, I mean, we haven't really seen, other than like her exes, which come up very rarely. And I mean, we've had some instances of Mulder flirting with other women, I think, in other episodes. But this is like, I think, can you think of other ones where Scully is actually like attracted to someone in the episode?
Aside from episodes about which that is the whole point, like Milagro and like Never Again.
Right.
It's not something that happens like incidentally as part of an episode to my recollection.
Right.
There's no sign whatsoever that she has any awareness of the men or women around her. So this is a rare thing to see.
Yeah.
And it occurs in both their versions too. It's not just Mulder who says, oh, hey, you're flirting with that guy. In her version, she's pretty damn flirty too.
Yeah.
So
oh yeah. Yeah.
We can be sure that this actually went down like this.
But, and it certainly did. And I think that, again, going back to my whole thing about how they're trying to sort of passive aggressively tell each other things. She's trying to tell him, well, this guy, he paid attention to me. What do you think about that? What do you think about that, Mulder? He was calling me Dana. You know what I mean? Like, and even though she's making it up, which I think she probably was,
he calls her on it, and then when she starts the story again, he's calling her Agent Scully at that point. Mm-hmm. So she seems to acknowledge that, yes, she got caught on that one.
So it's like, yeah, and then when you really start to think about it, you're like, well why is she saying that? I mean, is she just kind of la-la landing to herself and like having this dream? Or no, she's making a point to tell Mulder that this guy was interested in her, which I think is really kind of cute. And again, with the anti-shippy shippiness, it's very cute.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And it's interesting that, you know, it's not that he just finds her pretty or something like that, but he's like enchanted by all of her scientific knowledge.
Yes.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that aspect that, you know, Scully knows that's what she's got going on. That's the kind of man she wants, one that's going to love her for her mind. And so I love that aspect.
Little does she know that she already has that.
Well, for real, right? Yeah. But, you know, the sheriff does a much better job of showing it.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And she's very receptive to his attentions, which is, again, it
totally is.
Totally. And I wanted to point that out, too, because especially I think in her own version, when it's a little less obvious.
Yeah.
She's so cute. Yeah. Like her little kind of face is like when she first meets him and like they have a kind of a genuine little moment and she's kind of like, ooh, he's cute. And like she kind of tilts her head a little bit and it's so cute. And then like later when like Mulder's telling the story, he's like, oh, like it's like, oh my God, could not be more obvious about how into this guy you
are. Is that,
it's
that
so
the point where
funny.
She says, like, it, in his version, she says, woo boy or something like that.
Woo boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I don't think she said, but I think that was kind of
no.
I also like the idea that in Mulder's version and in this version, I think I might believe him that she actually asked the question twice because she was so distracted.
Like he asked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, is this something like, has anyone examined the body or something like that? It's like a very simple question. He asks it and then she asks it again immediately. That's pretty funny. And the sheriff's like, how do I answer this differently the second time?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And I mean, even her acting in that whole scene is so funny because like the entire time her head's just kind of lolled back and she's just kind of like gazing at him. It's like so overt. It's hilarious. I love it.
Yeah, it's like literal like hard eyes coming out of her eyes throughout that scene.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, I'll give this episode kudos because we get more Scully smiles in this episode than we get through pretty much, I'm going to guess, the rest of season 5 probably.
Yeah.
So it's nice to get some smiling from Scully whether these smiles occurred or not, we get to see some.
Oh my God, I love it. And you know what else I love? And I think I read this in a behind the scenes or maybe it was like a bloopers or something that Duchovny would always call him Sheriff Fartwell. like, because it's just because of the because of the way that it rolled off his tongue. Like, he could not say Sheriff Hartwell; it would just come out Sheriff.
Yeah,
it would come out Sheriff Hartwell.
Would yeah,
and it would, you know,
because the F.
Yeah, and you know how he loves fart and dick jokes on all that stuff. So it just made me laugh so much because every time he would say it, and I think in the maybe it was in the blooper, like Luke Wilson would be laughing and he'd be like Hartwell, and he'd be like Sheriff Hartwell. Anyway, I just thought that was
so funny. I could see if you were saying it in a hurry.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to hear that name any other way now.
No, you won't. Sheriff Fartwell. You won't. And every single time you hear Mulder say it in this episode, you will now hear Sheriff Fartwell because that's what he says.
Yeah. I mean, that is kind of how it sounds if you say it quick enough.
It's pretty funny. I love it.
It's just another weird aspect to the whole episode.
Yeah.
There's just many weird aspects to this. I mean, I'll give, you know, everyone credit. It's very imaginative. Like, you know, making a cross out of, like, garlic breadsticks to ward off the vampires. I mean, that is nuts.
It's the whole...
That's nuts.
This whole thing is so ridiculous. I mean, I do want to actually talk about the plot.
Okay.
If you're down for that yet.
I'm down for that.
Because I am still... And, you know, I don't watch this episode for the actual X-File, which I think is... It's pretty amazing that this is literally the only vampire episode we have in the entire... run of the show.
Does three count as a vampire episode?
Oh, you're right. I forgot that didn't happen. That wasn't.
I know we like to pretend. Yeah, yeah, we can extract that from the canon. I'm fine with that.
You're right. There was another one, but we don't speak of that one. But
no, let's move on.
But yeah, I think the ending is a little anticlimactic because it's not only just we don't know what happened; they all decided to leave. But like, I honestly cannot think of a reason why Mulder and Scully weren't killed. What's your thoughts?
It's a little
on that?
Weird. It's very like you have to kind of pay attention to figure out. Wait a second. It's almost like there's some missing scenes essentially.
Yeah.
Because we go from Mulder and Scully in peril in the company of vampires. In Scully's case, with the sheriff. Mm-hmm. In Mulder's case, with all the vampires descending upon him. And then, if I recall correctly, the next time we see them, Mulder's in a car for some reason, and Scully's wearing, like, is she wearing the sheriff's jacket?
Yeah.
And she says she, like, woke up in the cemetery. Yeah. So it seems that they've both basically been rendered unconscious. I kind of interpret it as meaning, like, what the sheriff was trying to convey to Scully, which is, hey, we're just regular folks. We happen to be vampires, but... You know, we're not going around killing people. We're not going to kill a couple of government agents, that's for sure.
Like, Ronnie's the only killer. He's the one who makes
Ronnie's
us all
the
look
only
bad.
Person who actually is trying to kill anybody. The rest of us are just, you know, regular taxpaying folks.
You're totally right. And I mean, I totally missed it. You know, it made me, it occurs to me when he's in the car and he's giving her the drug, the knockout juice or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you're thinking, oh gosh, she's in danger now. But then when you're right, when you take into account his words, is he just like, look, we're just trying to like live our lives and be low. Like, it makes me think that they're just essentially trying to put them off the scent. Like, these FBI agents are after us. They're on to us. So we need to knock them out and then get up out of town.
Yeah, they're basically, just trying to kind of like, you know, put them out of commission while they make their escape.
Yeah.
But certainly, you know, it doesn't look that way. I mean, after Scully gets knocked out, the sheriff, we see his like wicked, what are they, like green or yellow eyes.
Right.
And you're like, it's very scary.
Yeah.
And so, of course, you think something terrible is about to happen.
Well, and then the way they're all attacking Mulder, like you're thinking that you're thinking he's straight up going to get killed. But I'm like, are they just trying to dope him? Like, what's happening?
Yeah.
And what happened to Ronnie? Like, did he ever get out, like, of the coffin?
That I assume he did. That's a good question, too. I mean, is there no justice for him? I mean,
no.
He did actually kill those people.
Yeah, and he got away.
What's going to happen to him?
And I mean, obviously he didn't kill Mulder and Scully. He could have.
Yeah.
He wanted to.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Okay. Well, you explained that to my satisfaction. Thank you.
There's a few loose ends at the end for sure, but it's more about sort of the twist, I guess, this idea that, hey, Ronnie is a real vampire, but he's acting out vampire stereotypes. And so it's a very, again, multi-layered, clever thing. And it turns out they're all vampires. And I think that when you're trying to sort of write to that as your goal, then it's hard to come up with anything other than just trying to convey that twist.
Right.
And anything other than that just gets a little bit lost in the shuffle slightly. Because, I mean, there's obviously, to me, there's no logical reason for all of the community members to descend upon Mulder at once. I mean, if they're trying to knock him out, really one person would have been sufficient.
Right, right.
You don't all have to encircle him.
Right. I mean, it just seems like to misdirect us.
They're misdirecting us. And then we go from that kind of misdirection to, wait a second, is the episode over? Just like that.
Yeah.
I don't know if there could have been like a little bit more of a transition, but I don't know how to write television. So who am I to criticize? But it is, you have to be kind of paying attention to figure out how did we get from that scene to this scene? And it's a little bit confusing at the end there that, wait a second, it's just over, just like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, shoulder shrug, it's not necessarily what they were trying to do. So
no,
that's okay.
I mean, and again, it comes to an end at least. It's not just kind of left. Yeah, like it's not left in terms of like, well, what happened there? They're gone and the thing's over. So it does.
And it's a fairly traditional X-Files ending in the sense of it's over or is it?
Right.
Because, you know, the monster is still out there kind of thing.
Right.
So, you know, as an ending, it's a pretty X-Files-y ending actually. So I'm pretty happy with the ending.
Yeah, yeah. I did want to mention that I think it's funny, like the one part in the episode that I don't like as a shipper is the part where he like very happily just says, here, stay here with him. Don't say I didn't do nothing for you. You know what I mean? Like, you know, completely.
Like he seems pretty genuine about that.
Yeah, he seems like, hey, friend, you know, stay here and have fun with this guy. You know what I mean? And that still doesn't sit right with me. Especially considering if people think that they're sleeping together at the time, which makes no sense, but I'm not going to get back into that debate, but, no, I'm not going to, but I don't like that. But again, I feel like they make up, and I need to say this, I feel like they make up for it at the end because the way Mulder is looking at her when she's wearing that jacket, not only like at the beginning, he's kind of like, why are you wearing that guy's jacket? And then when he bends down to like tie his shoe, he looks her up and down again. Like he's seriously trying to figure it out. He's like, wait, what happened? What actually happened? I didn't think anything was going to actually happen. Like,
yeah, when I said, you know, have fun kind of thing, I didn't expect you to actually like have fun.
I meant like talk about vampire theories and stuff, you know. Yeah. No, I feel like
just having a laugh.
Yeah, I feel like they kind of made up for it at the end, but with that look. And again, I don't know if that was David just doing that, which I think is very possible. But I like that they kind of ended it with that because
there is something to that for sure.
Yeah.
That moment, especially when he bends down to tie his shoes, there's something going on there. And I felt like I was missing it. It's like, okay, I get it. His shoes were untied because, you know, the vampires like to untie people's shoes. But mm-hmm. there was a little something else going on in his performance when he bent down.
He's looking at her because he's trying to figure it out. What happened?
Maybe that's exactly what he was doing. Yeah. I knew I was missing something, that there was he was doing something and I couldn't quite figure out what it was. But I think I'm going to check that C note again with that interpretation in mind.
I definitely missed
that could well be it.
The first several times. And then when I realized she was wearing his jacket, it all made sense.
Yeah.
So I mean, because that's what you would be thinking. You would be like, why were your clothes coming off, Scully? What's happening? What? You know, like, you know, the wheels are turning.
Truly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I mean, when you show up wearing someone else's clothes, it's kind of indicative of something.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's
even if it's just their jacket.
That's what's going on there. Is he's wondering what's going on.
You could be right about that. And I mean, we get a nice moment. I enjoy the moment when Mulder is sort of checking out Scully's neck to make sure that she hasn't been bitten. So
yeah, that's kind of
slightly sexy.
It's kind of reminiscent, not in any way, shape, or form as good, but it kind of reminiscent of the ice scene when they're kind of checking each other out. No words.
Maybe.
They're just touching each other. It's all good.
It's a little reminiscent of the pilot when he's checking out her mosquito bites. Yeah. Who knows?
Because she can't do it herself. He needs to see it for himself. He needs his proof, right?
Yeah,
he's
absolutely.
He's being Scully in this moment.
And he is. And he's concerned for her. And she, you know, thinks nothing of him, you know, having a gander. And it's, you know, very sweet. And I appreciated that moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the motel room scene, which is probably... It, from both POVs, probably the best scene in the episode, I would think.
It's very fun, yeah.
First of all, I just love how Mulder decides to just like make himself at home in her room. Like, why? Like, why is he doing that? It's not even just like, I'm just too lazy to go next door. Like, he fully just takes off his clothes. He takes off his pants. He's just going into her bathroom and like taking.
Yeah, why is he showering in there?
Well, I don't think he showers. I think the sink goes on because the pizza guy's right there. I mean, he very quickly takes off his pants. I have to say, the pants come off very quickly. Like, I don't even think she's out of the room and his pants are off.
He addresses very quickly, and this is his version of events. So yeah, we can at least assume he wants us to think that he took all his clothes off when he arrived in
right.
Scully's
room. And
it's not in her version. I don't think in her version does he take his clothes off. I think it's only in his version, if I recall correctly.
No, I think he's wearing he's wearing his tank top in her version. So I mean, but it's not like it didn't happen. Like, we know it happened. Like, he stayed behind in her in her room. But I mean, it's the funny thing is that, again, it's like, to her, this is my room. Stay out. Like, I don't want you in here. And to him, he's like, well, fuck that noise. Like, you know, he doesn't. And, it's actually really intimate. Like, he's in her bed, like eating the pizza, like using her magic fingers. He's got like all his stuff. Like, he's got his stuff out, like on the nightstand. Like, he's tucked in, man. Like, he's like not going anywhere.
He's making himself at home.
He's waiting for her. Like, right? Like, I'm not suggesting he's waiting for her for any sort of untoward reason, but he's just kind of like lonely. He's like, I'm not going to go back to my room. That's sad. I want to stay in Scully's room. Because
I'm hanging in Scully's room.
She'll be back eventually, you know? And then, you know, I just think it's so cute and funny.
And it is very cute. And if I recall correctly, and you'll know this better than I, in Scully's version, as she's leaving, it seems I think the only sort of admonishment she gives him is like, don't track mud all over my room. But I don't think she says anything along the lines of, get out. This is my room.
No, she does. She says, this one's my room, Mulder. Don't get mud everywhere. I think that's what she says.
Yeah. But I think she's okay with him staying as long as he doesn't get mud everywhere.
Yeah,
that's kind of how I took that.
No, you're totally right. But I mean, she does make it clear that, hey, this is my room. Like, she lays it out for him.
It's definitely her room, which I find kind of an interesting point in the script, actually, that they wanted to establish this is in fact Scully's room. And yes, Mulder is hanging out in Scully's room.
Right.
And she's kind of like not surprised that he wants to. The only issue she has is that he's muddy.
Right.
So it kind of makes me think like maybe he does this quite a lot.
I think he does. Well, and I think he does. And I think she's just kind of resigned to it. She knows he prefers to just hang out in her room, which I think that's kind of, it seems like it's their thing, which I think is very cute.
Because
even when she tells the pizza guy, she's like, that guy in there will pay for it. Like, it's not like, can you just tell him to leave too? Like, you're like, say, like, could you just take it next door? Like, you know, she's just so resigned to the fact that this is just the way it is. It's very cute.
Yeah, the pizza is gonna arrive. It's gonna still be eaten in my room, just not by me.
Exactly.
Mulder's gonna be in my room eating the pizza, and it's like, whatever. This is how it goes. And Mulder does not deny that's exactly what he did.
And then I love when he's sitting there, literally standing there in his underwear, okay, in her room, and he's like opening the pizza and he's like, ah, Scully. Like,
I'm always like, is that like just because he's like so pleased at her choice of toppings?
I think in his mind he's like, you knew just what I wanted. I was ready for this pizza, and it's like, you read my mind. It's like, in his mind, there's no way that she ordered this pizza for her. She did it for him. Like, that's why I think that's so funny.
It is a funny moment by the way he says that. So
especially
and it is funny. It's funny that she thinks to order pizza because that's what she sees in the stomach of man that she's doing the autopsy on.
Yeah.
That is pretty funny. That is like, that's kind of peak Scully right there. Like, she's doing an autopsy, going through someone's stomach contents, and instead of being grossed out, she's like, pizza, that sounds pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, God. I love it. Like, she's not grossed out at all. I love that, too, that coming right off the heels of the scene where she's saying, I do it all for you. And, like, that's from his perspective, by the way, that she's saying that. Immediately after that, he's like, I'm gonna eat your pizza. I'm gonna take that from you too. Thank you, Scully. Like, it's so good that several episodes down the road we're gonna get the future speech, because at this point she deserves it.
She really deserves it. She's earned that and then some.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny when I remembered that line, I do it all for you, Mulder. I had sort of remembered that as being from her point of view, that she had been like, you know, I am a martyr for you. Why aren't you seeing this? Yeah. So I found it kind of interesting that it was that was the way Mulder saw it, which was kind of interesting and amusing in itself.
I think it's interesting, too. I mean, we look at it in the middle of a comedy episode, and so it's funny, but it's true, especially like I just mentioned the Fight the Future thing down the road, to acknowledge the fact that he's aware, you know, aware that that's how she feels, whether she said that or not. It's coming from him, you know, so it's an interesting thing to note that is from his POV, and it's something he's already cognizant of at this point in their partnership. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's nice. It's a cool little moment. I also think it's funny too. I was actually watching this tonight when my kids were in the room, which maybe wasn't the best idea. But they happened to walk by when the bit with Mulder on the magic fingers, where he's like laying on
That's
the bed,
so great.
And she's like, and my daughter's like, "Why is the bed shaking like that, mommy?" And I'm like, I'm trying to think of like a PG way to explain this, because I mean, it's not like it's not PG, but I'm trying to think of a way to, I'm like, well, you know how, you know, sometimes it like it tickles and it feels good. And like, she's watching it and she's watching him laughing and she's laughing cause it's funny. And I mean, I think that's like the funniest, one of the funniest moments in the episode.
It's pretty funny.
But I was sitting here thinking, gosh, I thought the magic fingers thing was just so innocent, but I don't know how to explain it to a 5-year old. I really don't. I was
stumped.
I
don't know if anyone can explain magic fingers to anyone.
To anybody.
They're just a mystery. They're a mystery to us all.
I love the fact that they're in this motel with a bed that has magic fingers, and she just has all these quarters, and she's just, she's like, I'm down for the night. I'm good.
Yes.
I've got my magic fingers.
She couldn't wait.
Yes.
She could not. And like when she says to Mulder, I just put money in the magic fingers. She really wanted to enjoy that. And it is great when she's like trying to talk to Mulder about the autopsy and being quite serious, but she's doing it while the magic fingers are going. So her boy
a little bit
sort of. Yeah, magic fingery. That's pretty funny.
What a great idea. I think this is, it was just like, even little dumb things like that are just so funny. Like, she's your theory, and like, she's like on the bed and the whole thing's shaking. Oh my God. And then even you get that moment, that brief moment where they're like laying on the bed at the same time, which I'm sure.
I don't think I didn't notice that.
Yeah, I'm sure everybody freaked out at that at the time, even though like she immediately gets up. It's adorable.
Yeah, but it happens. It's brief, but it happens, because we don't get many of those moments when they're on the same bed at the same time, even for a brief moment.
Right.
And she doesn't seem like, you know, freaked out by it or anything. It's just like, oh, screw it, I gotta go.
Well, neither of them do. I think that's what's so cute about it.
They looked pretty damn good together to me on the bed. So
yeah, well, we both
agree
with that.
There's plenty of room for both.
I just think it's so cute when, even when it just comes down to like how close they are at this point. That like we were saying, like all of this is expected. Like just in the natural progression of this partnership where they're at, none of this is strange or weird. This is how it is. Whether they like it or they don't like it or whatever, this is just their routine. And I think that's I think that's what's so great about this sequence here. From both of their points of view. Great scene. I just love Mulder with the sunflower seeds when he has to throw them at Ronnie. It's so funny.
That throwing the sunflower seeds is pretty good. The way Ronnie reacts,
he's like, "You're in big trouble.
Like, you're in big trouble." Like, why do you have to do that? That's funny. He does a pretty great job with those lines.
That is
just a funny moment.
And even David's reaction, but Mulder's reaction when he kind of like, his eyes are wide and he kind of nods like, so there. Like, it's such a great little expression. Like, I got you.
It kind of looks like he's reaching for his gun, because I think his gun is right next to the sunflower seeds. But since he grabs the sunflower seeds instead, but it turns out to be a good idea even while he's drunk.
He was so proud of himself, too. I love it, because he was just
He really was.
Yeah, I knew what to do.
Yeah, boom, gotcha.
So cute. Oh, my God, so funny.
Yeah, it's very cute. He passes out shortly thereafter, of course. But, yeah, the sunflower seeds play a very prominent role in this episode. One of the more prominent roles for the sunflower seeds.
Yeah, I didn't actually do any research on this, but I wonder if that's, like, a true thing in terms of, like, the obsessive nature of vampires.
No, but it sounded really believable the way they told it.
Yeah, I mean, I believe Mulder I would believe Mulder if he told me anything, honestly. He's my weakness. But yeah, I believed it.
I'm buying everything he's selling.
Yeah.
It sounded logical to me.
Yeah. Going back to that autopsy scene, because I know you want to talk about that. I think that scene alone is the reason that this episode is Gillian Anderson's favorite.
Yeah.
Honestly, because I just think it's so great because she's just so 100% done with everything. Like, she's just like, so I don't want to be here. I don't want to be doing this. Oh, my God. But I'm doing it for Mulder because it's fucking Mulder. It's so funny and I love it. It's just.
Yeah. And we don't often see the details of her doing an autopsy. Like, she must do this every time where she takes out the organs and weighs them.
Yeah.
This is obviously part of an autopsy, and I don't think we've ever seen her actually do that before. It probably is, like, really a hassle and unpleasant, and the intestines all come unwound. Mm-hmm. This probably happens in an autopsy. So it kind of, for the first time and maybe only time, I feel, we get a real sense of how physically demanding an actual autopsy is.
Right.
Her neck is tired, her feet are tired.
Yeah.
It's like, usually when she's doing an autopsy, it just looks like boom, 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 it's a breeze.
Right.
But this kind of emphasizes that it's hard physical work that we're doing here. In addition to, you know, she's smart, it's also very physical as well.
I like the
and
idea.
That makes sense.
I like the idea, too, that they're taking something that is actually quite, I don't want to use the word morbid because, but it's like, it's a dead person. I mean, you have to kind of be respectful in a way and turning it into a comedic moment. Like, here's this just dead person. Here's the heart, lung, blah, blah, blah. Like, everything is just like, it's paperwork, essentially, to her.
Yeah. Which I suppose, I mean, after all the autopsy Scully's done, that's probably how you would look at it.
Yeah, totally. So I like how they treated it like that in this episode. It was successful.
Oh, exactly.
You know.
And I have to give a little shout out as a Canadian to the fellow who plays the coroner who does the autopsy on Ronnie, although he never gets as far as actually doing the autopsy since Ronnie's not dead. That is Brent Butt, who is a comedic actor in Canada and well known for the TV series Corner Gas, which I think is available, I want to say, on Amazon Prime maybe in the US now. Anyway, highly recommend the series. He's a very, very funny man and one of our great Canadian treasures. So I just want to give a little shout out, Brent Butt. And he has that great line, probable cause of death. Gee, that's a tough one. When he's got the wooden stake sticking out of him.
I was going to actually ask you if that guy was Canadian. I really was.
Yaha,
because I was Brent like, he sounds Canadian.
Yeah. He was trying to do Texan, but I don't think accents are Brent's forte necessarily. and he lives in Vancouver, so it's no big surprise that he wound up on The X-Files.
Right.
So just love him. A small but pivotal role. And he's a very, very funny guy.
Speaking of accents, I do need to bring this up because as much as I love like all the Scully and Mulder moments in this, there's like almost too many to pick a favorite. I have to say the hardest that I laugh during this episode is when Mulder and Sheriff Fartwell are in the graveyard and he says, "We used to have swamps, only the EPA made us to take calling them wetlands."
That's pretty funny.
I laugh so hard when he says that because it's just like he's talking to himself. Like, this is something apparently he's pretty upset about, but like Mulder doesn't care at all. But I just this makes no sense. Why are you telling him this? This has nothing to do with anything. But it's just so funny. I love it. Wetlands.
It's a great line to be sure. It's a little, you know, the sheriff. Well, that was just not what I'm going to call him from now on.
Yeah.
The accent that Mulder gives him, it's obviously over the top and all part of like the buck tooth thing. It's a little bit like it's obviously meant to be insulting towards him. You know, Mulder obviously doesn't like the guy because of, you know, what he's got going on with Scully. But it is a little like I feel a bit kind of like uncomfortable because it's just a stereotypical kind of rural person kind of over the top performance.
But here's the thing. I feel like it's
a little awkward.
It's okay in his POV version, right?
Yeah. I mean, I can see that there's a reason for it.
Yeah. He's just trying to make him come across as unattractive as possible in his version.
Yeah.
Like stupid, dim-witted, can't,
yes,
you know, speak properly, got the buck teeth. Like, he's trying to make him come across as very, very undesirable for Scully. And so in that regard, I can give it a pass. Like, if that's the way they made him talk in the actual episode, yeah, I probably would have been a little
right
with that. But because it's in a comedy episode, it's because it's this intentionally heightened moment, I can give it a pass.
That's a fair point.
He's like, I don't hear no birds singing.
Yeah. That was a fair point, actually. There were no birds singing, and it was the winter time.
Oh my God, it's winter. We ain't got no birds.
And I mean, Mulder doesn't come off as super intelligent in that scene either, because I think that's the scene when, you know, he's going on about how, you know, the killer's likely to return. Yeah. And then Ronnie just pulls right on up.
Right.
And then, you know, takes off, and Mulder's still going on about how, oh yeah, he'll probably wait until, maybe he'll wait till after dark.
Yeah.
And like, you're missing the obvious right under your nose, dude. Yeah. So he doesn't come off as super smart in that scene either.
Right. To be fair, Ronnie is quite the unassuming villain.
Well, he is, but, you know, it's the X-Files. Mulder right. should really know he by should, now. You, unassuming right. villains are everywhere.
You're right. He should know. I have to say, too, that scene when they're in the car, him and Sheriff Fartwell are in the car together, that there's a moment in there where they're talking about the Rain Man that it's clearly David coming out. I'm watching it, and I'm like, this isn't Mulder I'm watching anymore. This is David. It's really funny how I know when that happens. Like, I can be like, it's funny, and I love it. It's a funny scene, but I'm just like, you guys are just kind of ad-libbing at this point, and David's just being David. Like, it's very funny, but it's...
Yeah, I wonder how much of that was ad-libbed, because I'm sure there's a good chance some of it was.
I'm sure it was. Like, there were some outtakes of them in the car, and I think part of it was the Fartwell thing, but like... if I'm remembering it correctly, but like, it was just, yeah, it just seemed to me like maybe a run that they did, that they just decided to save and put in the episode because it was funny.
Yeah. I mean, that was pretty funny. Just yeah. the whole thing about, like, you know, that would actually be illegal. So
yeah.
Was,
yeah.
It's pretty like, funny concept.
He's like trying to set him straight. He's like, yeah, he's trying to tell Scully, not only is this guy dumb, he's trying to do illegal stuff, Scully. I mean, come on. Like, it's just.
Yeah, but I set him straight.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, she's probably thinking, yeah, because you're one for the rules, Mulder.
Yeah. Like, all of a sudden, you're like Mr. Lawman.
I just love how he turns. I just love jealous Mulder. Even when it's very subtle, like, it's there. And it's funny. Yeah. And especially like this kind of episode, like I'm saying, you really have to kind of pull it apart layer by layer to get that. So I don't know.
Yeah,
It's worth it, though.
It is. And we don't get jealous Mulder very often, because we don't get Scully
with another dude
making gaga eyes at anyone very often. So right. we have to enjoy it when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate it. Yeah. I appreciate jealous Mulder as well. So that's all. It's all good in my books.
Well, I mean... Overall, did you come out watching it more recently liking it any more than you did last time, or are you still kind of exactly where you're at?
I think I'm always going to be where I'm at with Bad Blood. I really appreciate your point tonight, though, about the added layer of this isn't necessarily the different points of view that they genuinely have of each other. It's actually the point of view that they want to communicate to the other.
Right.
And I hadn't thought of it that way. And so that actually makes me appreciate it on a whole other level in terms of the structure of the episode and the success with which it's done and the intelligence of the writing. I mean, if you're not paying much attention, it can come off as just this silly, fun episode, but it is actually very smartly written.
Yeah.
And I probably appreciate that a little bit more, but sort of on an emotional level, it's never going to really appeal to me as an episode, I think. But I can admire it from afar. And I'm never going to tell anyone, if anyone says that's their favorite episode, I'm never going to say, oh God, how could you? I can understand why it would be. It just, for me, it's not X-Files-y enough to ever make it, you know, into even like a top 50 probably for me. It would maybe be like, I'd put it maybe in my top 100. I don't know. I'd have to think about it. And part of the problem is for me, and maybe, you know, maybe folks can appreciate this. The more other people love Bad Blood, the more I dislike it, because it's just like, why? There's just, if you don't like something and everybody else it seems does.
Then you like it less. Yeah, I get it.
Somehow make you like it. I know it just, I don't mean to be contrary about it, but it's just, it kind of makes me like, oh, it's like, I think part of me is just jealous that I'm missing out on this fun thing that everybody else is enjoying. And I'm just sitting off in the corner going, but I don't like it. And it makes me somehow feel even more negatively towards the episode. So I think that's part of it. So if you enjoy it, kudos to you. I have nothing but respect for the fans of Bad Blood. If you, like me, are a secret person who has kept it to themselves that they don't like Bad Blood because they don't want to come off as a bad X-Files fan, it's okay. It's okay not to like Bad Blood.
Well, okay, cool. Well, let us know, guys, what you think of Bad Blood, obviously. And you guys please do that at XFD on Twitter. Sorry, what is it? At XFD Podcast on Twitter.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And follow us there. We follow everybody back. We love to chat to you guys about the episodes, about anything related to X-Files. Thanks, you guys, for listening. And we will be back with you in a couple weeks for another episode of X-Files Diaries. Bye.
Bye.